y'all. It's Rational Response Squad. About to hit you in your motherfucking face. It's like they keep telling lies, why they keep telling lies. Jesus never existed and he's ripping off you guys. You'll read the Jesus puzzle and the faith, the incredible shrieking son of man. The testament to scan like that phony ass Koran. Yet they chew around like bands, like that whack ass Benny Hinn, Billy Graham, Pope Finn. They some sick and twisted men. Why they lying to the people, trying to turn them all to sheep. The Bible's simply cruel, all of Nietzsche's shit is deep. With a rational response, we critique the evidence. In 2006, religion has no relevance. Just a sick and twisted dance, trying to take the pain from death. Osama selling virgins, what the fuck do Christians get? An ascetic came to earth just to make you feel like shit. Well, you can't die for me, no, you can't die for me. You'll burn me like a witch, go ahead and cry for me. Cry for me. Yo. And this goes out to Rook Sapien, Scientific Mike. Nothing but free thoughts transmitting through the night. Evolution is the record for the evidence we fight. Richard Dawkins, Robert Price, trying to set the record right. On the mic, flow precise, anti-gospel, anti-Christ, anti-ant-culture twice. Fuck right-wingers, archetypes, just a bunch of wicked lies. Selling war, selling spies, scooter-lookies are disguised. Why they checking out our lives? Why they can download this track? Patriots invasion app, we're just trying to fight back. Rational and that's a fact. Why they keep telling lies when religion's a disguise? To take the pig from death and to govern all the people. I'm asking you the questions in the Inquisition sequel. Most rational people look beyond the good and evil. Most rational people, we look beyond the good and evil. My name is Proclaimed once again. Chilling out. The Rational Responders, Mike Rook and Sabian, doing big things. Be on the lookout for the upcoming album, Question Everything. You can find it at ProcleanCreations.com. Once again, this is the Rational Response Squad, bringing it to you live and direct.
Join us right now in the chat room at www.rationalresponders.com. If you are listening to our live stream, join us in the chat room at www.rationalresponders.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Rational Response Squad. I am Brian Sapient.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Mike Huberkopf.
I am Rick Hawkins.
And we are
the Rational Response Squad.
You are about to enter a war zone. I will make some predictions on tonight's show. First of all, in the pre-debate...
Are these prophecies?
Pre-discussions. I you know, that's
prophecies
about the best... That's about the best that's going to come out of this show. In the pre-discussion with Matt Slick from CARM.org, C-A-R-M.org, he asked for us to not bring up any biblical contradictions. And of course, the reason why... is because, you know, inevitably, they're all taken out of context, or the scholarship of the contradiction is poor. So I said, you know, fine, whatever. That's fine. No contradictions will be brought up in the show, as long as you promise not to bring up this very lame argument that presuppositionalists bring up. It's the sort of argument that, in my opinion, a five-year-old could debunk. The argument goes that atheists can't account for reason, but theists can. And the reason why theists can account for reason is because they say that all reason comes from God, and they just assume or presuppose that God exists. And the good point of presuppers' arguments is generally when you bring their arguments down to that most fundamental and root level, they inevitably tell you that you don't understand their position. So there are thin little prophecies in this opening statement here. We'll probably hear that we don't understand presuppositionalism. We'll probably hear that we haven't read enough about it. We'll probably be told multiple times logical fallacies that we use. He'll say something like, "That was a red herring," or "That was a non sequitur. He loves doing that." He'll do that sort of thing. He will also, what was the other point?
He'll accuse us of begging the question.
Accuse us of begging the question. He'll tell us probably that, that we're not letting him talk. If he dodges the question and one of us interrupts to keep him to the question, he'll tell us, well, we're not letting him give the answer. He'll also dodge the question. He'll dodge the question probably many times. We probably won't hold him to the question as many times as he dodges it. He will probably throw out fallacy after fallacy after fallacy, all while telling us that we have thrown out fallacy after fallacy. So those are my rough predictions of how this is going to go down. It could go completely the other way in a very civil manner, but I don't think it will. And so you guys want it. You guys wanted Matt Slick on the show. You kept saying, the Christians kept saying, this is the guy. This is the man. Bring him on. You know, you're constantly challenging us, and I've got a feeling after the show, we'll have a fleet of people tell us that they want somebody better than Matt Slick. You know, Matt Slick wasn't good enough, even though we've gotten probably, I've probably gotten 50 people ask me for Matt Slick on the show since we've started the squad, because he can defend the faith better than anybody out there. So,
sounds like Steve Gregg to me.
So, here we go. I will, take a brief commercial break. Before I do, let me remind you, of course, EvolveFish.com is the home of the Evolve Fish, a rational response to the Jesus Fish. And they've got shirts, hats, mugs, books, all sorts of material for you to pick up and show off your free-thinking pride. And by doing so, you'll probably run into other free-thinkers, people that you know in your daily life right now, you didn't even realize, thought just like you. And you wear your atheist t-shirt, and while you may go home with a black eye, you might also go home with a new friend. So pick up some gear at EvolveFish.com and access EvolveFish.com by going to the bottom left-hand side of our website and clicking the Atheist Goodies link. And therefore, Evolve knows that their commercials are paying off on our show. And don't forget to also check out our links through Amazon.com. Everything purchased through Amazon.com from our website helps support us. And have you guys checked out the Rational Response Squad Real World yet? The Rational Response Squad Real World is our little version of the MTV Real World and basically all of reality TV, where we'll let you into our home for some home videos that admittedly we're making mostly to post online. But some of these are videos that we're just making for our own fun, and we'll put them up and give you guys a little taste of what our house is like. And you can check out the RRS Real World by clicking on the left-hand side of the menu of rationalresponders.com. And take a brief break. Be right back. Check us out, rationalresponders.com. Visit us in the chat room. Click webcam room up top. And click webcam room on the side or chat room on the right. And come hang out with us while the show is going down. See you in a minute.
This is Cole Clean, representing the Rational Response Squad. Check out my new album, Question Everything, at ColeCleanCreations.com.
You're brainwashed by religion, brainwashed by greed, brainwashed by everything. Your parents mislead, read some philosophy, education sets you free, your religion makes you blind. The truth is never written, not in any single book. It's written in the millions, gonna change your outlook. I'm exposing fake teachers, damaging religious leaders when they brainwash you with hate, hellfire, punishment. Unreasonable gods who believe what they say is true, it just doesn't seem certain. How does it seem to you? I'm doubting you too. Nobody's ever right. Don't ever try to tell me what heaven looks like. You've never been there.
Got my new album, Question Everything, at PoleCleanCreations.com. Support Free Thought Hip Hop. What up?
We gotta question everything. Yes, question everything. Question everything. Yes, question everything. Question everything. Yes, question everything.
Hi, son. Have you found Jesus yet?
You mean that guy that people worship that never existed? I'm sorry, I follow Hammurabi's laws.
Hammurabi's laws? What are they?
There's a whole list of them over at www.rationalresponders.com. You'll see believing in Jesus is a violation of an irrational precept.
An irrational precept?
Yeah, that's what Hammurabi's laws are. Belief in a God is irrational. The responders can help you with your irrational problem. Listen for their radio show on freethoughtmedia.com.
All right. Thanks a lot. I'll have to do that. See how it's down? A
little unrational. Hello, this is Will Power, and you're listening to the Rational Response Squad.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Response Squad. This spot would be the perfect place for you to advertise your free thought-related business or organization. With rates as low as 2 cents per listener, we blow away the advertising competition. Furthermore, what better way to spread the word than to support an organization fighting to free humanity from the mind disease known as theism? Send a message to advertise@rationalresponders.com to learn about our rates. Again, that is advertise@rationalresponders.com. Your ad could be right here in next week's episode.
On the phone with us now is Matt Slick. You can find him at carm.org, www.carm.org. He is the owner of the Christian Apologetics Research Ministry, holds a master's from Westminster Theological Seminary, and he's been studying cults and apologetics for 26 years now. Matt, you're a non-denominational Reformed Calvinist Protestant. What is that?
Well, it's actually kind of confused. That's what it is. That's what everybody else would say about me. But no, I just hold to certain aspects of biblical theology, mainly God's sovereignty, his ability to communicate rationally with us, his truth, that he is the one who is separate from the universe. And I'm not of any particular denomination. And meet in a church that, or go to a church that meets in a garage. It's great.
And what do you do at your website? What does CARM do?
Well, what I try and do is, overgeneralize it, is to equip Christians and refute error. And so I analyze various theological systems and compare them to Scripture, and secular systems and compare them with Scripture, and just write about them. I try and be accurate, rational, provide evidence. Don't always do it perfectly, but, you know, I try.
And you have a radio show as well, don't you?
Yes, I'm hoping you guys want to be on my show. Return the favor, so to speak. It's on 5 days a week here in the Boise, Idaho area, an hour from 6 or 7 p.m. local time. And I have a lot of people on. In fact, yesterday I had on the radio, what's his name? He's Hemant Mehta.
Mm.
He's sold his soul on eBay as his book.
How'd that go?
And before that, I had a gentleman on who we call Bob the Atheist.
Uh-huh.
And discussing various aspects of atheism.
Right. And the radio station in Boise, Idaho is, what is the, maybe there's a web address that people can listen to online?
Sure, myfamilyradio.com.
Okay.
I'm on the AM station, just myfamilyradio.com.
And how did it go with Hemant? Did you actually debate Hemant on the existence of God, or just more talk about the backstory with what he's been up to with his book?
To be honest, I was, a little more interested in his views of Christianity.
Uh-huh.
Because I believe there are legitimate criticisms of Christianity, mainly because of Christians. And I was very interested in his observations.
What do you think are some of the legitimate criticisms of Christianity?
Christians.
Yeah, doing what? And acting like what? What is the problem?
Well, I think you ought to know. I think that most Christians, I can't say most, but a lot of Christians, unfortunately, have given up the intellectual fights. And because here in America, Christianity is open to everybody so easily that basically a lot of people who call themselves Christians can go into Christian churches and just give Christianity a bad name. And it's just that kind of a thing that I think is a problem. His descriptions of his encounters with various Christians and churches were interesting.
So would you...
No, actually, let me jump in. You know, actually, you mentioned, you know, obviously there's two things here, of course, the actions of Christians, but also that you said that Christians have given up the intellectual fight. I mean, I think to some degree, many of them sort of wave that white flag before the fight even starts because they think that their views can't be logically or intellectually defended. They're constantly falling back on, you know, well, it's just faith. And I think that's a lot of people do that. What do you say to them?
Well, they don't study the Bible very well. For example, Jesus said to Thomas after the resurrection, because Thomas, you know, the idiom or the phrase, you know, doubting Thomas, you know, he wasn't believing that Jesus had risen. And so Jesus appeared to him in John 20:27 and said, look, put your finger in my hand and your hand into my side. See, look, see, it's me. Now believe. And so what Jesus did was said, look at the evidence. Now make a logical conclusion based upon the evidence. I didn't use those exact words, but that's what was happening.
Can I ask you a question?
Now believe.
Can I ask you a question real fast on that?
Yeah, yeah, you can ask a question. It's your radio show.
Just yeah, okay. I just wanted to make sure that you're, this is Rick Hawkins. How you doing, Matt?
Hi, I'm fine.
Basically, the question I wanted to ask you is, why is it, I mean, you brought up John so quickly there, and, well, I understand where you're coming from with that. Why is it that that particular account, though, is absent from the rest of the three Gospels?
Well, it's kind of an interesting question. Why would it be required to be in all of them?
Well, while, obviously, you made a point there. I thought the requirement was that to show that Christ, and as directly intended God, had some will to explain the rationality of the faith, that you have faith based on reason, which I'm guessing is your point. So obviously that would be the intent, to include that passage, yet it's not there. Surprisingly, in fact, you don't have Jesus appearing at all in Mark. It's just an empty tomb with a boy. And then, of course, Matthew and Luke kind of build on that story. John seems to really build on the story and gets even more elaborate. So I'm wondering why that is absent from especially the Markan account.
Well, there, I don't know if you're aware of the manuscript discrepancy on the ending of Mark. Are you?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay. Well, this is just a fact that there are differences of endings. And in my opinion, this is my opinion, I'm no scholar in this topic, but I suspect that the ending of Mark may have been lost and rewritten according to memory. That's one thing. But at least we have the major manuscript of verses 9, Mark 16, 9 through 20. They do describe Jesus appearing after the resurrection. So I'm not sure what you're getting at.
Well,
if you say that
actually,
Mark doesn't have
a
resurrection account.
That's actually false. I would suggest Bart Ehrman's book, Misquoting Jesus, where he actually discusses some of the manuscript problems that we have in terms of redactions that were done by Christians in the early part of the church, where they redacted verses or entire paragraphs to suit their personal beliefs later after the Gospels had already been written. For example, we have manuscripts without an ending in Mark, where it ends, right? You know what I'm talking about. And then we have...
Can you quickly define what it means to redact?
What redactions? What do you think they are? Do you like?
I'm asking you. You use a term. You go to a guy and read a book, and you're talking about it as though you understand it. I want to know if you understand what redaction is.
Fairly certain a redaction is when somebody takes one verse and then adds to it their personal politics or beliefs, whatever have you.
So you don't know how the biblical documents are copied or transmitted, do you?
Actually, I do know how texts were copied. It was called Scripto Continue.
Okay. Are you aware of what's called gematria?
Probably in another term. Go ahead. You tell me, and I'll tell you if I know about it.
In English, we have alpha and numeric characters.
Right.
So we have ABC, 1, 2, 3.
Right.
In Greek... Let's just use Greek. Actually, Greek and Hebrew are the same in principle in this.
That they don't have numeric characters. I'm aware of that. Everything is alpha. Right. I gotcha.
Okay. And so when you would write a word, it has a mathematical value because they use those letters also
mm-hmm.
as numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason I'm bringing it up is because when you write a codex, which is pages, like we have in the book, and you would copy a manuscript, what these scribes would do is not only do one letter at a time, not by memory, by word, but by one letter, but they would also afterwards add up the numbers horizontally and vertically, make sure that the codex pages were identical.
Right.
It's a very, 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 very good way.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. Actually, it was,
the manuscript.
That's not true at all. I mean, we have evidence of...
Yes, it is true.
All right, first off, have you read The Shepherd of Hermes?
No, I'm talking
okay,
about
now listen, hold on. I understand that. Okay, but the Shepherd of Hermes was a biblical document in the early church. What I'm saying is, in the Shepherd of Hermes, we have evidence. All right, whatever.
No. I can't let you go on with something with a false premise.
You're saying that the Shepherd of Hermes was not considered part of the New Testament canon by some early form of the church before 324.
Well,
please tell me you're lying there.
Let me clarify. If you want to discuss the issue of how the New Testament canon was arrived at, we can do that. But all I'm going to do is...
I'm not even discussing the New Testament arriving. I'm talking about the specific book which gives evidence to the fact that the author of Hermes was very clear that the scribes and the translators of the text, because, and don't forget we have manuscript evidence attesting to this in the Sinaiticus versus the Vaticanus, that when these scribes were transferring documents, they mixed up entire paragraphs, phrases, statements, because the words in Greek were duplicated, and because their eyes either got tired, whatever have you, all right,
yeah,
and they missed entire sections. And it's attested that the method that they were using generally allotted many problems, because there was many discrepancies in the text, and it's attested in almost, I can think, all the works that we have from schools, for example, the educational institutions at the time. There's a good book put out by Cambridge University Press, which deals specifically in education and antiquity, and it discusses some of the problems that they had specifically with the scribes when they were transporting the Greek, especially Greek, because Greek can get very, in order to actually translate it and understand it, you have to kind of know the entire context of it, so that when they were actually copying it, their eyes would move from one word to another and skip entire lines. So it's not a very accurate methodology, because even people writing the books, like in Hermes, has a specific area where the author's like, you know, basically condemning the scribes for ruining what he's written. And there's, of course, other attestation
okay,
as well.
First
and that's
of
what
all,
I was referring
I
to.
I never said the copies documents were perfect.
Okay.
Not on my website. You'll know that I've been writing on this. Pictography is writing twice what should have been written once.
Right.
Vision is improperly dividing one word into two words.
Right.
Fusion is combining them. Haplography is writing once what should have been written twice. Homophony,
right.
I've written a word with a different meaning or another word when both words have the exact same pronunciation. See, these things are existing in the documents. Okay?
Could I jump in and ask a quick question here? I'm not exactly sure what your views on are, how God interacts with us, Matt, but I'm not so sure, like, exactly what your views on this are. I'm kind of curious to know, but we seem to be, at least between you and Rook, in agreement that there were, you know, copying errors and things like this of these transcripts.
Of course there were.
Yes. Right.
So I'm wondering why a omnipotent, omniscient God would allow his supposed word to be corrupted in such a fashion.
Why would an omnipotent, omniscient God allow his creation to be corrupted by sin?
Well, yeah, that's an excellent question, too.
Because it's his choice to allow it. That's why.
Okay, well...
But if we're dependent on this, on the Bible, on the Word of God, to, you know, you say that God communicates with us, you know, through this book, and God allows it to be corrupted, I mean, that's...
Whoa, I didn't say he allowed it to be corrupted. See, what you're doing is, you're not being specific enough. You see, just because, let's just say that a few of the documents have some copyist errors, like maybe Jesu Christos instead of Christos Jesu, or they might omit the word the, which is ha, which is a single letter. They might do that here and there. It doesn't mean the text is corrupted. It means that the text has copyist errors. And all they have to do is take a variety of existing manuscripts and compare them. And then they can tell very quickly, very easily, what was really being said.
Right, well, the problem...
Copyist errors do not affect doctrine.
If I may say something, hold on.
I'm reminded of the old joke, you know, that the Pope dies and goes to heaven and asks to read the Bible in its original form. And Pope slaps his forehead and goes, "Oh, it says celebrate, not celibate."
if I can jump in here,
yeah, Mike. Please.
Right. Actually, I think that's a gross miscalculation of the manuscript evidence that we have. I mean, how many manuscripts do you think we have, and dating before 300?
5,000 supporting Greek manuscripts.
Okay,
something like 98.5% textual purity.
Dating back to when?
Gentlemen, if you're going to start telling me that the biblical documents are not reliable, let's just stick with the New Testament for now, because we'll be talking about...
I'm not saying I didn't... Now, don't straw man me. Don't straw man
me. If you want to say they're not, then I'm going to ask you why you believe in Caesar.
Okay.
Why you believe in Alexander the Great. Because
okay.
The textual evidence...
Okay, but
Caesar,
it's not... But here's the thing, though.
Better,
Hey, gentlemen.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I apologize.
Point.
I apologize.
If
go
you
ahead.
Guys call yourself the Rational Response Squad, then be rational.
Okay, like I said, go ahead, finish your point, and then I'm going to answer.
Not exactly.
Hold on. Finish your point on Julius Caesar, and go ahead, and I'll answer your question.
I'm not going to be allowed to continue and finish my statement. I think they'd make a lot of accusations and improper comments. Well, what am I going to do?
Look, Matt.
I'm trying to let you go. I've been sitting here saying go ahead and finish your point, but you keep going on about this, so I'm waiting for you to finish your point so I can talk to you.
But you guys are doing that very thing, you see. I'll go to answer, and one of you will jump in. There's four of you, right?
Yeah, well, Matt, you've been jumping in, too. We're having a conversation here, you know, when people have
a point.
Trying
to have a conversation.
All right.
Look, we're trying to have a nice, civil conversation here. Generally, when people are having a conversation, when a person is making a long point and something comes to their mind, they tend to interject. You know, that's just how conversations go.
Right.
You know, we're not doing this and you have 5 minutes to say what you want to say and we'll have 5 minutes to respond. We're trying to have a conversation here. So
I would suggest that you make simple, direct points instead of complex sentence structures.
I believe that we are.
We'll keep it simple.
And, right. You know,
yeah.
Just
so
take a step back.
One point at a time.
Okay, so respond.
And make it really
yeah.
Okay, let's work on you responding to my initial point, which was the gross overestimation of how many manuscripts that we have before 300 that you can actually use. You had tested 5,000 Greek manuscripts. Okay, sure, we have 5,000 Greek manuscripts. How many of them date before 300?
How many of them what?
Date before 300.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you real fast.
I'll tell you. The Nestle Allen, you're familiar with the NA-27, right?
Yes.
Okay. The NA-27 accounts six fragmentary documents before 300. Or at least before, I'm sorry, around the third century, there's six manuscripts, to the third century. All right. So we have the P52, right, which you're aware of, is probably one of the earliest that we have, right? The fragmentary piece of the Gospel of Mark, or Gospel of John, I'm sorry, which, is just, like I said, fragmentary. All right. We have no actual complete manuscripts, okay, until we get to the Pauline Corpus in 200. Alright, that's it. We have the Pauline Corpus, which includes Hebrews, and, I think maybe one or two other epistles that are really full texts. Alright. So, that's it. That's what we have, according to NA-27. Alright, we have a variety of other texts which come a lot after that. There's, like I said, you said 5,000, but about 98% of them date to after the 9th century CE. Alright, that's it. 98% according to NA-27. So, yeah, we have a lot of manuscripts. We certainly do, more than any other,
Let me ask you.
Go ahead.
Do they match?
Of course not. There's obviously redactions within some of them. I mean, look at the Vaticanus compared to the Sinaiticus.
They don't match at all?
Alright, I'm sorry. No, they don't, I didn't say they don't match at all. You asked me if they match. Of course they don't match.
They do match.
Sometimes, sure.
What do you mean sometimes?
Okay. When you're looking at the manuscripts that we have compared to the ones that we have today, all right, not all of them match, okay? Sometimes they do.
What do you mean by not all of them match? Exactly, perfectly, at every single word?
I was assuming that's what you were asking me. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I'm asking you. You're the one telling me, trying to teach me how textual criticism works. I'm asking you. Do they match or they not? And if they don't, what percentage do they not match in?
Well, I agree with you that the manuscripts that we have, I agree with you that the manuscripts that we have are very accurate. Okay? We do have lot of discrepancies.
Well,
hold on.
Agree. They're accurate.
Okay,
very accurate.
But over 5,000 manuscripts, and 90% of them are accurate that you claim, 98%, right? Was it 95%? I forget. I'm sorry. You tell me what you said. What was the percentage you gave?
It was 98.5% textual purity over the overall general thing of the manuscript.
Okay.
That's what I've read before.
So,
scholars.
But most that we have before the 9th century, all right, are not complete. So how can
But they
you,
overlap. They overlap.
There are some overlappings.
All kinds of areas.
Sure, right.
In fact, did you know the early church fathers quoted every verse of the, I believe it was the entire Bible, it may only be the New Testament, except for 11 verses.
Oh,
we
come
on. Even need the manuscripts.
What early church fathers are you talking about?
So, You know,
which ones?
What do you want to do with this? You want to just say that the Bible's not trustworthy? Is that what you want to say?
No. Why are you putting words in my mouth? I'm just asking you. I'm getting your perspective on things. All right. Now, first, all right. Let's do this, because you made a few claims earlier. I want to bring up too before we get back on the subject. You said, how do we know that Julius Caesar and Alexander the Great existed? Because we don't just have literary evidence, aside from the fact that the Civil War was written by Caesar himself. The fact of the matter is that we also have coinage and we have archaeology. Archaeological data is huge in terms of history.
Yeah, that was
right?
New Testament too.
All right. Yeah, okay, fine. For some things in the New Testament. All right. So, except we have no evidence for Jesus himself in terms of physical evidence. None. We don't have fragments of a cross. We don't have a spear that pierced him. We don't have any of his clothing. We don't have any coins signifying his existence. Oh. We don't have, let's face it. When you have a Caesar or an Alexander the Great, who have entire legions. Hold on. You asked me. All right, look. We have no contemporary accounts of Christ. All right. We have contemporary accounts of Caesar. We have enemy attestation of Caesar. We also, in terms of contemporaneous accounts.
Any contemporary accounts of Jesus, really?
That's what I said. And also, we don't have any.
Wait a minute. That's not true. All right.
Name one contemporary of Christ who we have an account of.
Matthew, Mark, Luke, John.
Okay, none of them are dated before 70 CE by the majority of modern scholarship. I won't say any, because there are a few flukes out there. Okay, if you're going
to
pull John A.T. Robinson on me, I'm going to be very, very upset with you.
Oh, no. Come on, guys. Look.
Nobody cares if anybody's upset with you.
I'm really surprised. This is basic stuff. You guys.
All right, basic stuff. Okay, I'll tell you what. I'll give you some sources you can look up. Authoritative sources. For example, the Oxford Dictionary of the Christian Church. Urban's Dictionary of the Bible. Let's see. There's also the Oxford Dictionary of Christian Worship. You can also check out all of Bart Ehrman's books on textual criticism. Even Metzger's books on textual criticism. There's also, let me see. I even have some here you can check out. Contextualizing Luke Acts from the JBL, by the way, which I'm a member of. There's also books by Joseph B. Tyson.
All right, slow down. Both of you slow down, okay? And the comment about that you'll be very mad with him is weird.
I don't care if it's weird.
I'm curious. You believe that the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, were all written during Jesus' lifetime?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay, because you said that it was a contemporary account.
Well, no, contemporary accounts are within the decade after by people who knew him.
Okay, all right, fine. So within the decade after, is that accurate, Matt?
Yeah, by people who knew him.
So you believe the Gospels are dated about when?
Questions?
Well, you can't ask a question yet. No, you can't ask a question yet. I need to know. I
can't
clarify.
Ask a question?
No, not yet.
Brian would like to
because I'm in the middle.
Point before we move on.
I'm in the middle of talking about the one point that I was just asking you about. So that point was, you believe then that the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were written within 10 years of the lifetime of Jesus?
I didn't say that.
Okay. Could you please explain when were they written? What do you believe? When do you believe those Gospels were written?
Well, I don't have it all memorized, but I believe they were definitely before 70 AD.
Okay. But
can you give me, just give me a rough. You're saying you don't memorize. I mean, do you mean like 35, 40, 45, 50?
Well, I would say within, if Jesus died in 33 AD, I would say Mark is probably written, within a decade, and the Gospels followed shortly after, and they were completed most probably by 60 AD. That's just a general.
And are there scholars that agree with him on this, Rook?
Outdated scholars. Like those who wrote before the last 50 years.
And Matt, you don't have scholars that you can show this claim to be backed by?
Well, what I want to do is actually look at the text itself.
Oh, let's do that.
Gentlemen, what you're doing is just doing it's called scholar war.
Okay, I'll tell you what. You don't tell us what we're doing. You go ahead and tell us within the text how they're dated within 10 years of his death.
All,
and I'll mute Rook as a benefit to you. Okay, go ahead. Now you go and tell us how we can show with the Gospels that they're dated within 10 years of the life of Jesus, the Gospel of Mark.
I didn't say they were dated within 10 years.
You're saying that it was written because we can know that. Right, because of what the Gospel says. So please explain to us. Show us.
Are you ready?
Yes.
All right. You got a Bible in front of you?
Yes.
Rook does, although he's muted right now.
Shh. All right.
You have the floor. 3 minutes.
When did the destruction... you guys want answers, I can give them to you.
You're going to get 3 minutes.
We're waiting for the answers.
I'm going to mute everything for 3 minutes.
Well, it's not 3 minutes. Okay.
But as much time as you need. Go.
Fine, go ahead.
In Acts chapter 1, Luke says, the first account I composed, Theophilus, about all that Jesus began to do and teach until the day when he was taken up after he had by the Holy Spirit given orders to the apostles whom he had chosen, etc. Most scholars affirm that Acts was written by Luke and that Theophilus was probably Luke's patron, all right? Now, the earliest that Acts could not have been written prior to the latest firm chronological marker recorded in the book, Festus's appointment as procurator in chapter 24, verse 27, on which, on the basis of independent sources, appears to have occurred around AD 55 to AD 59. That means Acts was written about that time, or before that. And the Gospel of Luke was written before that by his own admission. This is historical evidence. Now, why is it that the book of Acts, which is an account of the early church, doesn't have the destruction of Jerusalem, the destruction of the temple, included in it, when Acts itself is a book of the early church's history? If it was written after 70 AD, it is certainly reasonable to assume that that would have been included, being incredibly significant to both Judaism and Christianity. It wasn't. Most logically, Luke was written before then, and before Festus' appointment of AD 55, and Luke was written before that. Now, there's some internal evidence that you have to deal with. You guys can do what you want with it. You can dismiss it if you don't like it, but there's some evidence.
Okay. I'm assuming then you've made your point, and I'm going to unleash Rook. Okay, go ahead, Rook.
You're unleashing me like I'm some kind of wild animal in a cage.
On
like
a Cerberus.
Gnawing at the bars to get out. No, alright, so, okay, you brought up Luke Acts. Alright, I love Luke Acts. I don't know if you know, but Luke Acts is probably the author of Luke, the anonymous author of Luke, is one of my favorite gospel accounts and also writers, only because of the fact that there's so much controversy around it.
Alright, we'll do it within 3 minutes.
Okay.
He took two.
I'm timing you.
Alright, so anyway, Luke Acts, you said that it can be definitively dated by 55, right? Is that correct? Alright. That's
basically.
Okay, then can you explain to me the usage of Josephus then in Luke Acts?
The usage of Josephus in Luke Acts?
Yes, go.
Where's that? Where? I've never heard that.
Never heard that, really?
No, I've never heard anybody say that Luke quoted Josephus.
I didn't say he quoted Josephus, I said he used Josephus.
But there are almost...
There are parallels. Parallels between Josephus and Luke, which are pretty much direct quotes, right?
I mean, there are many passages that you can look at in Josephus and Luke that are almost verbatim.
I'll tell you what, I'll give you a small list right now, if you want me to.
Not a small list. Just give me one reference.
No, I'll give you a small list, because there's a bunch of them.
I'll give them one reference.
All right.
No, I'm not going to be able to do...
One reference. One reference it is. One reference it is.
Okay. All right, fine. One reference, and then I'll email you the rest if you'd like me to. All right. Okay, so here we go. I'll give you the one of the better ones I can find. Let's see here.
We can move on to a second.
Let's do this one here.
Suffice.
The same three rebel leaders are mentioned in both Josephus and Luke Acts, right? Judas the Galilean, right? Judas...
The same
three rebel leaders are mentioned in Luke Acts as in Josephus.
So,
Judas the Galilean, even specifically connected with the census, which is in Acts 5:37, Jewish Wars 2, 1:17-8, and Jewish Wars 18:1-8.
Wait a minute. Are you saying that because the Gospels are historically consistent with Josephus?
No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying
consistent, therefore they're not trustworthy.
No, that's not what I'm saying at all. Thank you.
The rational response.
Do you want to continue to straw man me, or do you want to listen to my reputation?
Everybody.
Where'd you get that?
Okay, Matt, hang on. Can we hang on 1 second? Okay, what we're saying is that there are definite parallels. Okay, he just asked you a question, but that's the second. Or maybe third time that you've made it a point to make fun of our name and thereby kind of call us irrational, which I would say...
I do
say,
believe you're irrational.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay, well, we believe the same about you, but how many times
we're
have we
not
said
sitting,
it?
Yeah, we're not... We haven't once made fun of your organization or your name or your thought processes at all. So we would really appreciate if you want to keep it on
the
friendly discourse, then you need to stop attacking us personally. If you've got an issue with the question, well,
you
but you
are
you're
not rational. That's not an attack upon you personally.
Okay.
Ding, ding, ding. Number four.
Wow.
Man the fuck up.
Hang on 1 second.
Why are you interrupting? Stop interrupting. Christ, let us talk.
I tell you to stop interrupting.
You're yelling at us for interrupting you, but then
you interrupt us.
So, I mean, like, we really do want to keep this on a certain level. If you've got an issue, if you want to say that, well, that's not enough proof, then Rook could provide you with another point. The claim that you made was not what Rook was trying to say. So if we can all agree to operate in this manner, we can continue to have a conversation. If not, things are going to get ugly. Nobody's going to be able to hear anything, and everybody's just going to leave here pissed off. So, like, I really think maybe, like, take a deep breath and, like, instead of making fun of us being the so-called Rational Response Squad, you should just address the issue.
Thanks, Kel.
And the actual issue that's being said.
Yeah,
don't make one up.
Of the
don't
issue.
Straw man me. That's a bitch thing to do. I'm telling you right now. So if you're done straw manning, I'll continue my point since you interrupted me and I gave you 2 minutes of free time to speak.
No, let him make his point.
Well, Rook wasn't even finished making his point yet.
Yeah, I wasn't I wasn't even done. I didn't even make my point. He interrupted me and cut me off.
Okay, Rook, go.
All right. First of all right, you asked me for one example as opposed to the many that I could give, which would definitively prove that Luke Axe was using Josephus when he wrote his book, considering the fact that he's been quoted many times as writing a sort of history. All right, he never names the sources, so we'll never know for certain. All right, and of course, the fact that he doesn't name the sources also leaves us in doubt of his accuracy. Second of all right, you want to claim that Luke Axe was written in 55 CE. Okay, well, modern scholarship disagrees with you on that. In fact, like I said, the Journal of Biblical Literature, which is one of the leading journals, scholarly journals out there, and you even said yourself you're not a scholar on this issue, okay, have agreed, and in fact, there is several books out which I can recommend, that Luke is a 2nd century anti-Marcionite book. Okay? The first person ever in all of our extra biblical works to cite Paul in any fashion, guess who it was? Marcion, right? Why did Marcion quote from Paul, right? Well, he was using Paul because he was the first person to actually collect the Pauline corpus and use Paul exclusively. Okay, none of our other extra biblical people ever talk about Paul before then. He's the first one to do it. And guess what? All the Gospels, they don't really have a very good picture of what Marcion is trying to do. They're pro-Marcion in a way, especially Mark. And then Luke was the first person to say, hey, you know what? We have to unify the church because right now we're split between Marcion and the Orthodox faith. So we need to kind of condense this into one faith. And how do you do that? Well, you make Paul more Petrine, if you want to say, more Peter-like, right? And you make Peter more Pauline. And that's exactly what Acts is. Acts is a document meant to confront the Marcionite Gnosticism that's apparent in the 2nd century. And guess what, man? This is well claimed in modern scholarship. So this is not just me making shit up. This is actually attested, and there's very good books, very well resourced, referencing the text itself, not other scholars. All right. So I would suggest you read them before you make a claim about something you obviously have not read about. Now I'm done with my point.
All right. Now, so what you're telling me then is because Josephus and Luke agree that somehow Luke isn't trustworthy?
Why are you making straw man arguments? What are you talking about? When did I say that Luke isn't trustworthy?
You said
what did I say?
That Luke was copying Josephus.
I did say that.
Right,
I did say that.
Look. Okay. Can I clarify here? I think your point was about when the timeline issue here.
Right.
Now, if this is taking from Josephus, then obviously it couldn't have been written when Matt is claiming it had been written.
Right.
Is that correct?
And, well, along with the other evidence that I provided in this dialogue.
Exactly.
All right, about...
Hold on. No. Gentlemen, this isn't working. Look.
I know it's not.
Would you like it if I were to take 40 scholars, I spend time and I just say, here's 30, 40 scholars that hold my view. Now respond.
Yes, I would love that, actually. I would prefer that you did that. Because that would tell me that you're up to date on how modern history is decided and worked. Because modern history is based off of archaeological evidence and the scriptural evidence. Right? You're using speculative scholarship, which has been outdated for 100 years. And this is the kind of stuff. No, not oh boy. This is true. All right.
Most scholars don't agree that the Bible was the gospels written as early as you put them.
Look, right.
I've asked you on the actual evidence in the gospels, not what some people who weren't there have started saying. I can get scholars like A.T. Robertson who's saying that the majority of the people who are now holding the view that Luke or Acts was written about 63 A.D. Now, A.T. Robertson's the best scholar in New Testament Greek that existed when he was alive. And you guys aren't going to believe him because he doesn't agree with your presuppositions. Look, gentlemen, if you want to do a scholar wars things, you know, it's just, you can do whatever you want. You can quote all the guys. I can get scholars too. I've got bookshelves of scholars. I don't have them all listed here, not knowing what area you're going to try and attack. Well, how am I supposed to know everything? I can't. I have gone in and I've done the research and I've asked you a specific question. I asked you a question which you didn't respond to. There's the actual book of Acts and the actual book of Luke, and I'm asking, if the book of Acts is written in the second century, and it's a history book used to validate Christianity, why is it that the destruction of the temple is not recorded in there? Don't you think that if somebody is going to write a book like this and then fake everybody out to make it sound like it's written in the first century, before all the apostles died, don't you think that they would have the sense to include the idea of its validity of the destruction of the temple? It's not there.
All right, Matt. Matt, I hope you appreciate that they've been muted for the last 2 minutes and they've like jumped through the computer about 6 times. They're ready to go, unleashed.
All right. Let me just address some of your points initially.
Wait a second. Did you say you muted me? Is that what you
said? No.
They muted me.
I muted them.
So that Rook you had 2 minutes unfettered. Yeah. They have been jumping for the microphone. So I want you to know that you got to say everything that you wanted to say there. I just want you to know you got to say everything you wanted to say there.
All right. Now can I respond to that?
Me.
Can I respond to that now? Let me respond.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Matt. I'm going to mute us again. Go ahead.
You guys get 5 minutes.
Go ahead. I'm muting us again. Go ahead.
No, it's your guys' show. You're the guys who, there are four of you, keep jumping in. We haven't really discussed anything really solid yet. All we're doing is discussing what you think are problems, and you don't even really understand the issue. You're going to what the scholars that you like and quoting them. I'm asking you about actual issues within the actual text themselves. And you aren't able to respond to it. Oh, come on now, guys.
What?
I'm just letting you go.
We're letting you go.
We're letting you talk for a while so that you feel like you're getting your equal share of time. Because apparently us talking for 5 minutes and you for 30 seconds, that's your argument against us, is that you've had no time to talk this entire time. That's what you're saying?
And go ahead. Go ahead, Matt. Muting us again.
No, I'm saying that you guys really don't realize what you're doing. You accuse it, but you guys are doing the same thing, you know? Look, can you guys answer me? If Josephus and Luke are verifying one another, so to speak, would it invalidate Luke? Not at all. Would it invalidate the book of Acts? Not at all. Not at all. If you want to say that you can say whatever you want and you can believe whatever you want, you can find the scholars that you want. I can find scholars contrary to what you would conclude. Because you're going to gather to yourselves the kind of scholars that say what you want to hear. And you're going to say the same thing about me. The evidence then becomes that my scholar can beat up your scholar, or your scholar can beat up my scholar. You know what? We don't get anywhere with that. The issue is, what does the text actually say? Let's look at what they actually say instead of what someone says about them and see if the internal evidence is consistent. Now, that's a whole discussion right there. If you guys want to do that, or what I was hoping to do is something different than this, but maybe we'll do it when you get on my show.
Can I respond?
Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead. I've unmuted you. Go ahead.
I think, you know, you went on a rant there, but you continue to basically miss Rook's basic point. He's not saying that Luke and Josephus are contradictory. he has basically only said that if Luke takes from Josephus, it can't have been written when you claim it was written. That was his point. His only point. Okay. Now.
So, well, hold on a second here. I want to get on this because I've been wanting to say something for some time now. But I've been good. I've been trying to be good. So.
Well, I've muted you, so you didn't really have much of an option.
Yeah. So anyway, back on your initial point, you said, why doesn't Luke mention the fall of Jerusalem? Well, that's easy to point out, especially if it's a second century document, because obviously it was too much out of the way. It was too far out of the way to bring up, and that wasn't what Luke was intending to write. Luke was intending to write the Gospels, just like every other Gospel before him. So he was using the Gospels, first of all, as a means to use to write. He was basically copying Matthew, Mark, and John. Okay, probably not as much of John, but more of Mark, right? And he was using the Gospels that he had available. I mean, probably not even the four that we have today. He was probably using other variants as well. And Marcion's Gospel as well he was using, which is also, which has been referred to as a proto-Luke, right? And has been transcribed by modern scholars from the early church fathers and what we know about Marcion and his Gospel. In fact, the Pre-Nicene New Testament is written by Dr. Price, and it's excellent. Now, as for your use of John A.T. Robinson, you said that he's one of the best scholars out there. He's dead. He's been dead for some time now. Okay, he's old scholarship, all right? We don't use old scholarship anymore in modern history. It's been refuted. Know who refuted John A.T. Robinson? Charles H. Talbert refuted John A.T. Robinson. Dennis R. McDonald refuted John A.T. Robinson. Richard Carrier refuted John A.T. Robinson. His claims have been dismissed by modern scholarship for a reason. It's old, it's outdated, it didn't have all the resources we have today, all right? When he wrote his book was in 67. That was when he wrote his book and never revised it. Okay, you're talking about redating the New Testament, right? That was written in 67. I'm very well familiar with John A.T. Robinson, all right? And that was why I had made a complaint earlier about using him, because modern scholarship does not use old scholarship. And that's basically what I'm saying. William Foxwell Albright is another one. Dead. Not worth using today, all right? His methodologies and the way he was brought up in the history is old news. He wrote back in the 20s and the 30s, for goodness sakes. All right. So anyway, been refuted. All right. These claims of yours, they've been refuted. And there's textual evidence to show that it was dated in the second century. And the actual language of Luke Acts is anti-Marcionite in the fact that it's been shown by these scholars using the text, not because I like them. I didn't even like the idea of dating it that late, but the evidence is what compelled me to believe that. Right, it's not a matter of me liking somebody and just assuming what they write is true. That's what you do. I don't do that. I'm not a Christian. I don't buy everything I read. All right, I test the scholarship. I test it out to see if the actual language is correct. I check the Greek. I check the author's citations, and that's how I make the conclusion that what he's saying is accurate, not based on what I read in the text alone. Because it's easy to read the text. It's another thing to understand the text, and I hope you can appreciate that.
So can I respond now?
Yeah. Mike is all yours. We're on mute.
So basically what it comes down to, which scholar you're going to pick to use, and if they're old or not valid. And you'll say, because they've been refuted, that we can't trust them. Well, I don't accept that as being a rational response. You see,
there it is again.
You can make all the claims you want about one scholar refuting another scholar. I'm in contact with scholars who know a great deal. I'll tell you, they don't agree with some of the things that you're saying. Just because you can say you have scholars doesn't mean that what you're asserting is true. And this is the thing that I don't think you're getting. You can't just dismiss Old Testament, scholars who are dead. Oh, they're dead now, so we can't trust them. Or they're dead and they've been refuted. Well, you know what? I've talked to atheists about various things, and they will say they've refuted an argument I have, and I know they haven't. And yet they'll claim it in spite of the facts. And so I just bear with me in that, let's just say that in all the research I've been doing for 27 years, I've certainly read that there are, absolutely liberal scholars who give all kinds of reasons to say what they're going to say. But do you ever hear about the conservative scholars? No. Why? Because the media doesn't want them. And you guys certainly aren't going to appreciate
I hear about the conservative scholars.
Wow.
Yeah. No, that was a straw man. That was a straw man.
And you guys are not going to be sitting here comparing which scholar goes to which scholar. This is why I don't like discussing the issue of the scholars. I mean, I can get a guy on the phone who speaks, who reads Hebrew. The greatest, probably Old Testament scholar, who, I don't know if he's still alive, is Meredith Klein. And he did some incredible research on, suzerain-vassal treaty relationship. I mean, I don't know how many languages the guy knows. Let me tell you, you get on here, and you talk to a guy like that, he will make mincemeat out of anybody who would say anything contrary to what his conservative views of historical documents, at least in the Old Testament. As far as New Testament, I don't know which scholars to go to right now. I haven't had to deal with that. But you know, you guys, all you're doing is you're doing your homework from a liberal perspective, getting a list of things and saying, now answer all these. No, you don't honestly expect me
good assumption
to sit here and have it all memorized on how to respond or where to respond in all this. I've tried to go to the actual text and look at what's in the text. I don't want to argue with you about your opinions, because all this is your opinions.
Yeah,
of
we're
which
just giving opinions.
Are competent and which scholars are true
just
and which scholars are right. So we're arguing opinions and not getting anywhere.
Just, we don't have facts here.
Okay, let's
just opinions. Go ahead, Kelly.
Oh, you have facts? I have facts too. So
ours is just opinion, though. Ours is
okay,
just opinion.
Hang on. It's my turn now. I'm taking over. Okay. So what we're trying to do here does not result in what you're calling a scholar war. It's not about, well, I can name 10 names off the top of my head and you can't name any. Because obviously, not only do we not have every single piece of evidence memorized, neither do you, and we don't expect you to. That's not the point here. The point with using scholarship when you're talking about history is that that is how the ultimate decisions are made. As new evidence becomes available, as, you know, we find more and more things through lots of different areas, whether it's archaeology or, I mean, they find like a fragment of something else, or people revise the theories, they go over them again. And it is important. You can't discuss history at any point in any arena without using the data that we essentially get from these scholars, because unfortunately, I can't just roll over there and start digging things up myself. So it really isn't the way that you're trying to put it, that like we're just in a battle of my liberal scholars versus your conservative scholars. But another thing in history that's important is the concept of consensus, just like in any other scientific field. You have scientists who disagree with each other, but as far as coming to a general consensus, it is based on all of this evidence, all of the scholarship, all of those things which corroborate each other to formulate a theory about what really happened. And that's how it works with history. So I really don't think that your argument that we're all just trying to listen to the people that we want to listen to and not the people that we don't want to listen to is valid at all, because I know that we have all studied conservative and liberal scholarship. So, I mean, like, if there are quotes from Josephus in Luke, direct quotes, or pretty freaking close to direct, plus all of this other evidence that all supports the same theory, it's not just saying, well, my scholar's tougher than yours. It's a bunch of corroborating evidence from a bunch of different sources.
When did Josephus die?
When did he die?
It's the date of Josephus' death, Rook.
Right around 100.
What was the,
right around 100.
What was the time of day, and where was the funeral held, and who was there, Rook? Go ahead, tell us.
I'm muted. Yeah. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, Rook, when did Josephus
die? You just gave the date. Go ahead, give it again.
He died around 100 AD. He was born around 35-40 AD.
And he was
okay.
Writing.
And he wrote. And he wrote in 96-97. So, what's your point?
But you know,
this isn't really working out real well, because I ask questions, and when I try and make points, you guys jump in.
Muted again.
And I asked you, what your point was.
Steve, what your point was?
All right, muted.
You went,
and then you said,
I'm muting my guys, because you're right. They're just talking over you left and right. It's really, it's not working out. It's not working out.
Yes.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Matt. I'm going to mute all of them, because they've just been, they've just really been interrupting the whole time and dodging your questions and strawing left and right. It's really bad now.
I don't even let him speak at all. He hasn't spoken once.
Like,
okay, so Joseph has died in 100.
And we asked, says that what's your point?
Right.
That he died. Okay, he died in 100.
Right, that he died in 100.
We asked you what your point was.
What's your point? Go ahead.
Are you guys there?
Yeah, waiting for you to make your point.
We asked...
Oh, it's my turn to speak? Well, I'm afraid to say anything, because every time I do, you guys jump all over me. So I'm really reticent to say anything, lest three or four of you start interrupting and telling me that I don't know what I'm talking about. So I don't know if you guys are listening now or not.
Yeah, like I said, we've been listening. Go ahead.
Oh, so maybe we should just do one person at a time instead of four on one. Do you think that might be okay?
Yeah,
you're one person.
Wait, go ahead.
So, what's the girl's name?
Girl. Kelly.
I don't. Really? I'm just the girl.
She's the girl.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I don't know your name. All right.
Right.
That's okay. You're not the only one. That's why it's like a running joke around here. It wasn't just about you. It's just that that's how everybody refers to me.
Yeah, she's the girl. Okay. So anyway, so yeah, the point was, Joseph has died 100 AD, Rook says he wrote about him in 96, your turn.
Okay, I'm just going to address Kelly. Now, when I first started talking to you guys, I was sitting down at my computer taking notes. You know, I'll respond to this or that. Now I'm not doing that anymore. Now I'm just waiting for you guys to get done, so that we can have a discussion. You see, Kelly, when you get on the mic, and you guys are all doing this, and you make these statements, you know, that's fine. You can say what you want. And I really don't believe that anything I say about the dating of the Gospels is going to make any difference to you. You can say the consensus of the scholar says this or that, and it doesn't mean anything to me. I look at the internal evidence, and I do look at what some of the scholars have said, and I see some of the mistakes that some of the scholars have said. And I have scholars that I've contacted. I have scholars that I've studied under, and I have scholars that I've read, and they don't agree with everything that you guys are saying. And that just tells me that what I need to do is look at the evidence. I know that there are all kinds of people who can write all kinds of things about all kinds of documents and make all kinds of statements. Are you familiar with the documentary hypothesis, the JEDP, Graff-Wellhausen theory?
Yes, as far as, I mean, the Old Testament goes, and then you've got, you know, higher criticism for the New Testament, but yeah.
Okay, well, let me just ask you a test question. Do you believe that that's a valid theory?
Do I believe that it's a valid theory in reference to the Old Testament?
Yeah, do you think, the Pentateuch, the first five books, you really think that they're written by four different authors and compiled by Moses?
Documentary hypothesis does not believe that it was compiled by Moses specifically. They say that there was an ultimate redactor who more than likely I believe it was after the Babylonian exile, they got together and put everything together and compiled all of the different documents into one. Well, I mean, it's not up to me to determine whether or not I believe it is a valid theory. It is a prominent theory in Old Testament scholarship. So my believing in it personally or not believing in it personally really has no bearing on the fact that it is a theory that is considered valid by many people in that field of study.
And it's also a theory that's been refuted soundly by many people. And I can give you the references for it. The reason I'm bringing this up is because even though the facts contradict the Graff-Wellhausen theory, it doesn't mean that liberal scholars and people like yourselves who need information to be contrary to what the actual things are won't believe them anyway.
I've done my own research on it. I've done a little test. I've written an article on it. A really interesting little article describing things.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I got a book somewhere in my shelf here to my left that just trounces the whole thing. It really put it to rest.
I have a question.
The theory is, the theory is still out there. What I'm trying to tell you is that you can find scholars to say whatever you want, and you can find a consensus of scholars to say whatever you want.
I don't think you know what consensus means in scholarship.
It doesn't mean that it's true. This is why I look at the internal evidence of what the texts actually say.
Right, but if you look at the internal evidence of the Bible and the Bible alone, okay, and you're going to use the evidence inside the Bible to prove it, when we already know that it has been edited and redacted and compiled and put together to eliminate contradictions, and that the canon was specifically chosen. Hang on. You're not letting me talk now. Don't accuse me of interrupting you if you're going to do it to me. Thanks. You've already admitted that that happened, and the canon was specifically chosen to pick the Gospels that agreed with each other and did not contradict the belief of the church at the time. So, how is it that you believe that you can use evidence from just this one thing to prove the validity of this one thing? That would be like me saying that I can use evidence from Gone with the Wind to prove Scarlett O'Hara, because look, she lived in Atlanta, Georgia, and all these things that are recorded in this book really did happen. There really was a civil war, and they really did burn down Atlanta, so that means Scarlett O'Hara must have been real. You can't do that. It's other sources, other corroborating evidence. So you are not properly representing our opinion.
Okay, can I respond now?
Yes, you may.
When you have a syllogism is a conclusion made on two logical statements, that the statements made before are invalid, generally speaking. The conclusion's invalid. Now, you make these statements. You say it was redacted. The documents were edited in order to remove contradiction. What you're doing is assigning motives and assigning things that you don't know, and you are impugning the character of the writers. You are saying that you cannot validate and cannot prove, and then you're building on them. Why should I attempt to have a rational discussion with any of you when you are all doing this repeatedly? When you're all making these statements that I say, that's not accurate, it's not accurate, it's not accurate, or doesn't logically follow. This is the problem I'm having with you guys.
Okay, but I don't understand.
I want to have a rational discussion. But if you're going to start saying something like, they did this in order to remove contradictions, I'd say, really? How do you know that? Where's your evidence? Where's your facts?
Okay.
You want to state your opinion? Fine, that's your opinion. That's okay. If you have an opinion, that's fine. You can't validate that opinion from the historical documents. You cannot validate it. But you make these statements and you build on them.
That's not...
This isn't how you do things. This is not how you are.
What about the addition of the Trinity Doctrine in John? Talk
the
about
what?
Redactions. What about the Trinity Doctrine that has been added to John?
You mean the Comma Johannium in 1 John 5:7.
You got it.
Yeah, it was added.
Okay,
yeah.
so that's an example
that's
of
example
redaction.
That's what Kelly's saying.
Or it's just pwned yourself.
Yeah, good job.
Guys, I never said it doesn't happen. I never said the documents were pure. All right,
good.
You just said
we're not rational for saying so.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, good job.
Okay,
I'm
thanks.
Telling you.
You got it. You took care of it.
You protected yourself.
You
good.
Win. You
okay.
win. You
yeah.
win. You pwned yourself. That's good.
One at a time.
You agree with us.
Thank you.
Yeah, you agree.
We're not, in fact, irrational for bringing it up, as you claimed.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry.
No, you don't need to hear me.
I don't need to hear you?
No, it's okay. We just talk over you anyway, so... Okay, so anyway, back to my initial question I wanted to ask you a few minutes ago was, what do you think a consensus means in scholarship? Because you're using that term, and I don't think you know what it means.
Well, consensus, I'm not exactly sure I know what it means. I'm assuming it means majority.
Consensus in scholarship is 95%. Okay, when 95% of scholarship agrees on something, it's consensus, all right? Now, what do you consider liberal scholars? Because you've been throwing this word around, liberal scholars. What's the line where you would define liberal?
So, are you saying to me that because a majority holds something, it's therefore true?
No, I asked you how you define liberal scholarship. I was just making a simple point there. That wasn't part of my point. Please define liberal scholarship.
Define liberal scholarship is those who deny what the clear evidence within the scriptures teach.
Okay, so anything that doesn't agree with you, considered to be liberal, but you put that same standard on me. You projected a standard, by the way, which I do not hold. I hold every scholar in the same light as I would any other text that I read. Perhaps that's a difference between you and me, because I just want to verify this for you so you understand where I'm coming from. As a historian, I look at everything equally on the same par, as if there is no standard of conservative and liberalism. That does not exist in scholarship, only in apologetics, okay? In scholarship, what we look at very specifically is what the text can tell us and what the consensus might be on that text. How to come to a consensus, by the way, is to use the text and put it in peer review. And then peer review allows scholarship to review the text and the commentary on the text. And then what we do is we determine if the evidence is accurate or not. If the evidence is not accurate, well, then that obviously that person has not made a very good case for his claim. If it is accurate and it makes a very good case, there's no reason why we should ignore that claim. Obviously, there's good reason to accept it or at least look into it further, right? So this is what scholarship does. There's no such thing as liberalism and conservatism. All it is scholarship. No, there isn't. Only to apologetics who don't understand historical methodologies.
Are you telling me that there are people who have presuppositions that are not exactly perfect? No.
What are you talking about? Stop strawmanning me. Why is it every statement he makes is a strawman?
It was a strawman, but where are you going with that, Matt? Are you saying that every presupposition that what?
Look, gentlemen, I need to be able to finish my sentences.
Yeah. Well, if you talk about it, then you're not going to have time to do it. So go ahead and finish the sentence. Every presupposition what?
Everybody has presuppositions by which they judge what is or is not scholarly or true. You guys have it.
Okay, so does that mean that what? Some presuppositions are wrong, or are all presuppositions right?
What?
Does that mean that some presuppositions are wrong, or that
all presuppositions are wrong?
Okay, so how do you tell that your presupposition is right versus anybody else's?
Fuck yeah, you have this company. In what topic?
Any of
them. The existence of God.
The existence of God?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah. I'm not sure I'm following you.
How can you not follow that?
Telling me you're,
yeah. This is what you do for a living. You make a career out of presupposing that God exists.
And that atheist can't define or derive a morality out of something.
Get off of that.
Hold on. Are you guys giving up on this,
Well, no,
discussion on the book of Acts.
You said some presuppositions are wrong. I'm curious how you can determine which presuppositions are wrong and which presuppositions are right. What sort of experiment can we conduct to determine which presuppositions are right and which ones are wrong? If you don't have a very good experiment for me, I'd like to know how you know that your presupposition that a God exists is right versus Rook's presuppositions that you want to claim that he has, which I don't believe he does. But forget about that. Let's pretend that Rook has presuppositions. How are yours more right than his?
How do I run a test for presuppositions?
I'm asking you.
You asked, but you said I had to do that. I'm asking you. You run a test? You mean like a beaker?
How do you determine whose presuppositions are correct?
Well, I would use logic.
Well, so you would start with an illogical concept to determine whether or not it's logical?
So you presuppose that
a presupposition is completely illogical.
He's presupposed. Presupposition.
Yeah.
He's presupposing a presupposition is what he's doing. It's kind of funny.
Well, I think, why don't I just tackle one of you instead of all
you are tackling one of us. We're a Borg.
We've been speaking one at a time. I mean, you keep saying that over and over.
We have
each taken a time to make a point.
Don't let him slide away from it. Don't let him slide away from it. How can you determine that your presuppositions are right versus anybody else's?
Presupposition in what area?
I already said the existence of God.
I want to speak to one person.
We're Borg. You are.
Look, Matt. None of us is going to ask you a question that any other of us would. So
wouldn't.
Brian and I are going to ask you the same sorts of questions. It really doesn't matter which one of them.
This is just a creative touch.
Would you like to actually answer the question?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
How can you determine that your presuppositions are right? How can you determine that your presuppositions are right and Rook's are wrong? And with the qualifier that I don't believe that Rook made presuppositions, assuming he did, how can you determine that yours are right and his are wrong?
First of all, if we're going to have this discussion, I'm only going to discuss
Jesus
it with one
fucking
person.
Christ.
That's it. That's it. Because this is where rubber's going to meet the road, if you guys can do this. But you have a tendency to jump in all over the place. This is why I have just been silent with you several times, because you guys are just doing this way too much. I need to speak with one person. So which one of you wants to tackle this topic?
Answer the question.
Why?
Which one of you would like to talk
Answer
to
the
me
question.
About this?
Look, you told us it was our show. We can do it our way. Answer the question.
You know, if one of you guys comes to my show, I'll treat you a lot better than I'm treated here.
Good. I look forward to that. I can't wait to hear Kelly on your show. She'd be glad to show up.
Okay. Well, that's nice.
You going to answer the question?
Now, I'm only going to... What's your name?
My name is Borg.
Borg? I'll call you Borg. Now, Borg, why don't you ask that question again, and let's see if it's a good question.
You know what, Matt? It's been a pleasure talking to you.
If you don't want to answer the question, then
Just say you don't want to answer the question.
We'll have Kelly come on your show.
I'm ready.
No, you're not.
I'm ready.
No, you're not. Or you would have answered the question already.
Correspond with Kelly on how you can get her. She'll be glad to come on your show.
Yeah, all by myself, so then you don't have to use that as an excuse for why you can't answer your question.
It's been a pleasure having you on. Thanks, thanks.
Wait, before you hang up.
Let's
ask him. One more time, one more time.
www.karm.org.
I'm not going to answer it because there's more than one of us physically present in this room.
Thanks so much, Matt. It was good to have you on, buddy.
That was fucking insane.
Yeah.
Hey.
I'm sorry to the audience. I'm sorry to those people out there who would say, you know, that was rude or something like that.
That
you have
wasn't
to understand.
Rude. He was being a dick.
How much time do we give him?
Dick.
How much time do we give him?
He can't answer a
you have
question.
To understand. We actually have to live through this phone call, okay, guys? And you know, it hurts us sometimes that we're part of this species. You know that so many people are, you would be embarrassed or ashamed to be related to these people, and I am. And I just can't talk to him. It's like, I mean, I wouldn't talk to a 3-year-old for that long about that topic.
He had such cush too, man. We gave him such cushion to do whatever the hell he wanted to talk.
I mean,
I've never done that. I mean, I muted us over and over and over to just let him go. And then you listen to him just argue.
But look,
we purposely muted everybody multiple times to let him go on for minutes at a time. We would, if one of us was talking, everybody else would be muted. So where the fuck was all this jumping in and interrupting? Jesus fucking Christ, could this guy project any fucking
Wait, Kelly, can I interrupt you?
No!
But
that's
like,
why we interrupt.
Look,
we have each other.
An interesting experiment would be to go back and listen to this show. Time, how long Matt speaks about complaining about being interrupted, complaining about us being irrational, complaining about other shit, or complaining about that more than one person is asking him questions. And compare that with how much time he spent actually making points or answering questions.
All right, this is Sapien in the editing room. After the fact, later that night, Achilles took the time to listen to this entire discussion with Matt Slick, and it turns out Achilles didn't count the difference of what Mike was just looking for with how much was whining and how much was actual arguing. But what he did count is overall time, and he says that Matt got around 28 minutes 10 seconds, and he says certainly with some errors, and I'll directly quote Achilles here. He says 28 minutes 10 seconds of time to talk for Matt. RRS, all members had 36 minutes 43 seconds of talk time, but factor in that a good bit of the RRS time was to keep the topic going on track and making Matt feel better. And Yeah. So obviously it's a really hard thing to keep track of the entire time when people are talking over each other. But that's 28 minutes for Matt, 36 for us. So there you have it. Back to the end of the show.
Right.
And you know what? Like, should it fucking matter if Brian asked a similar question that I do? All we wanted to know was what his test is for whether a presupposition is good or bad. We asked him that at least a dozen times in at least a dozen ways. He simply refused to answer because he does have no good answer. To answer that question destroys the very foundation of the thing that he makes a career out of.
Achilles asked in the chat room. Sorry to interrupt, Mike, but you know I'm going to interrupt.
Fuck you. Quit interrupting me.
Achilles.
God damn it, can I make a point?
Achilles asked in the chat room.
And
I'll let
go.
You make a point. Yeah, in one moment. Yeah.
And go. We're here now.
Achilles asked in the chat room, how many times was he muted? Matt Slick was not muted once during the discussion. He had an open mic the entire time. I could do that now. I figured out how to mute that, but I'm not going to ever mute the guest that I can conceive of or think of at this point. We were the ones that were muted. On this end, multiple times I muted, when you hear in that discussion Matt go for 2 minutes unfettered, there were people jumping out of their seats, raising their hands, screaming that they wanted to get involved. And I figured the best way to let Matt just go ahead and talk was just to mute everybody because there was too much. I mean, every sentence was something worth refuting. But yeah, I'm getting a question in the chat room. Do you have more than one phone line? I can get you on the phone right now, and I can conference in multiple people at the same time if you want. If anybody in the chat room wants to come on and give their impression of the discussion,
we should get Golden Gun on the show right now.
Feel free to PM me right now your phone number, and I will call you up immediately, and you can tell us what you thought of that discussion.
I want to get Golden Gun on the phone right now because the entire time, all he was doing was complaining about how unfair we were being, this, that, and the other thing. I would love to get him on the show and see if he can do a better job.
I think we were extremely fair. Matt had time to make his points. Matt had time to make his points. And yes, people are going to interrupt one another in the courses of conversation. That's simply how conversations naturally happen. When you're talking to somebody and having a conversation, you don't wait till they physically stop speaking to interject your points. Conversations flow better and more naturally when if somebody brings something up that you have a very pertinent point to interject, you interject at that point. You don't wait till they're a minute and a half down the road and that point is lost. That's
right.
Simply not how a conversation works. And if you're going to bitch about how conversations naturally flow rather than simply have a give and take, then nothing's going to ever get accomplished.
Well, the worst was he was whining and whining about how he wasn't able to make a point. And he was going on and on about our methodologies and how we do things on our own show, right? Yet he didn't answer us. I don't think he answered a single point. I think he just complained the entire time. Wah!
All right, Rook, I've got Jake on the line with us now. So, Jake, what do you think about the show there?
I was like cringing for Matt. I mean, I rarely cringe, you know, for the theist, but I mean. Like, Matt and I used to go on Pal Talk back in, like, you know, the old days, like 5-6 years ago, you know. I used to phone him then all the time, but nothing as bad as what he just, I mean, he just walked into one wall after another. And Matt's apologetics has always been, and since day one, the minute you start going down a line of reasoning that he's not comfortable with, instead of attacking your reasoning, he attacks like the emotions behind it, or he attacks what he perceives to be your motives. He brings up some kind of emotional issue. You know, like, oh, too many people are talking to me at once, or, sure, your scholars say that, but my scholars say this, and, you know, your scholars are no better than my scholars, so, you know, it's emotional appeals over and over and over again. And to hear you guys just, it was like Kelly gave him a left, Rook gave him a right, Mike, you know, give him an uppercut, and then Brian just knocked him out. I mean,
Mike says he kicked him in the balls. Yeah, Mike kicked him in the balls, he says. He didn't give him a left.
Yeah, no shit. I mean, he was just back in the corner. It was like the whole comfort thing again. You know, you should make a videos or an audio file of all of the theists that you've had just go silent.
The backed into the corner move, yeah. I was just telling Kelly that the other day. It's funny that you brought that up, and a lot of it's in audio, but that, and I was telling Kelly about that most of it's in audio because we probably had like 10 clutch moments on the show where there was just silence or some sort of, you know,
right,
creative dodging, And then, of course, the, you know, the culmination of it all is, you know, video of the Ray Comfort and Kirk Hammer moment where they're just silent and have nothing to say and utter.
I think the audience can tell.
I love, yeah,
that's
a good defense.
That would be a great silence video. That would be an absolutely great video.
That silence is the sweetest sound on earth.
After you finish mine, buddy.
Like, we had the first one, like, I think, like, show four with that, cat girl. Like, ask her a question. You actually put the crickets in at that point. But, yeah, I love that silence, man.
You know, it seemed to me like Matt is like, if you allowed Matt to continue his argument, it seemed to me like he was getting to the point where he was just going to say, nobody knows nothing. You don't know anything. I don't know anything. No one knows anything. So you don't have any room to say that I'm wrong because you're just as bad as me.
Exactly. Exactly. And well, honestly, that's what a lot of the time it boils down to, when you're talking to the people of that particular bent. You know, at least that's been my experience when I've talked to presuppositionalists before.
I'm not editing the show either. I'm going to let everybody hear it exactly how it played out.
You know, what was that point, Jake, where I saw in the chat room, Mike gave me a high five. He was like, this is from Jake. What was that about?
Is it just, honed him so well right before that it was just like I was sitting here with a big grin on my face just going, oh my god, Rook, kill him. It was just fantastic. So I had to tell Mike, just high five him. I mean, you just destroyed him in like just a few simple sentences.
What I'm most upset about is that there's people out there, and I'm not kidding, 50 people have sent us letters to try to get this guy on the show. Freaking Lawrence, who didn't know crap, who was just like some hotel worker in the back room, or like a janitor in the back room while he was in, did a better job than Matt Slick. He did an abundantly better job. Go back and listen to, like, he was like on one of the first 15 shows.
Yeah,
just some layman Christian who did worlds better. You know, the only scholar, okay, or guy who knows his shit that I had any respect for after leaving the show was Ergen Kaner. And even then, it was still like, you know, I knew it was because we were kind of under that whole question methodology that we didn't really, just the way that it was set up, we kind of ended up going easier on him. I think because we, at some point, like we wanted to like him or something.
I've been dying to make a point all night, this entire time, because I mean, there's going to be a lot of people out there like Golden Guns One, and there might even be some atheists out there like, oh, well, he's right about the Scholar Wars thing. You're just playing whose scholar is better. But I wanted to make a very interesting point that I haven't made yet that I'll try to make it as quick as possible too for the sake of time. But one thing about scholarship is that when it's old, the reason why it's not trustworthy is because new evidence or new scholarship has been brought up to refute certain aspects of that claim. For example, one of the most noted cases is that back in the 1800s and 1900s, early 1900s, there was the biggest focus in history was Roman wars and how the Romans fought wars. Okay, it was like everywhere that was just like, you know, everyone was writing about that particular subject, what they did in war, how they formulated their tactics, all of this stuff, right? Well, within the past 20 years, that entire 100 years of scholarship has been refuted by two books based on archaeological evidence and modern historical methodologies that have been applied through science, as in science, scientific methodologies that didn't exist 50 plus years ago, all right? So this is what I'm saying. The reason why the old scholars are not trusted anymore in scholarship is because they're outdated. Their information's outdated, and most of the time they use speculation and don't tell you it's speculation. They claim it as fact. Johnny T. Robinson is one of those people who constantly uses speculation, doesn't back it up with any sort of scriptural evidence. So that's what I'm saying. So that's why old scholarship is not considered relevant by modern standards. It doesn't follow the same methodologies. It uses speculation. And modern scholarship, better scholarship based on archaeology, refutes most of the old scholarship. So that's all I'm saying about that, basically. So, I mean, I hope other people understand. If they want to know more about it, listen to my show, Rook's Nook. You'll definitely be able to, you know, hear more about how history is done and how we do things and a lot of examples based on that. So
yeah, and I mean, I kind of tried to touch on that, like it's not just that it's old, it's that new information becomes available and then, you know, the theory is revised based on that new information, and that's how it works. I mean, there could very well be very old scholarship that has not been changed or refuted or whatever, because the evidence that we've found has supported that. But, you know, that's not always the case, particularly in history. But
right.
Just his whole,
right.
I mean, just,
and
it's not a scholar war. It's about corroborating evidence.
Exactly.
I don't think anybody fucking gets that.
Yeah, it's not about what scholars better. It's about the information the scholars presenting that's important, right? How well they back up their claims. It's not whether the scholar's right or wrong, whether he's a liberal or conservative. It's about how well you back up the claim that you're making in your thesis, right?
Yeah. And in his whole point that everybody has a presupposition, well, if you have presuppositions, then you should not be doing history.
Right.
You should
yeah.
not
no
be
science
doing
at all.
Science. Because
right.
you don't go into that kind of field with your conclusion already in your head and then just try to make the evidence fit it. That
right.
is the exact opposite of what either of those fields of study is about.
Exactly. And in fact, what they try to do is when you first get into that field is they try to break you out of your presuppositions. When you take an academic Bible class, right, it's not Bible study for, you know, 3 hours a week. It's you breaking out of your presuppositions, looking at modern scholarship and determining what the best way to look at the Bible is, how you view the Bible, how you view the history around the Bible, all that stuff. It's not a Bible study like, this is what John 1:1 says.
Yeah.
You know?
You go to the evidence first, and you make your conclusion based
exactly.
on the evidence. You
right.
don't conclude and then look at the evidence and try to make it fit together.
Which is the difference between apologetics and historians, is that
you
apologetics
know, but the fact
that,
that he would try to sit there and say that, like, you know, well, we all have presuppositions, but yours is wrong.
He's projecting.
Well, and you know what?
I think
and
he was projecting that entire fucking time.
Yes, he was.
Right, and it got summed up at the end of the show, where, you know, what the fuck good is a presupposition if you don't have a test. If some presuppositions are wrong and some are right, as he said himself, and you don't have a way to distinguish which is which, then what the fuck good are they?
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly,
like,
right.
So,
I mean, he basically refuted his own claim.
Yeah, he did. He was completely owned there, and he knew it, so he bitched about being asked questions by more than one
yeah,
person.
Well, can I just discuss this with one person? No.
Yeah. And
he couldn't handle
you know what?
It.
And you know what?
I think I take for granted that the audience is smart enough to figure that out, but only one if two of us are talking, then you can't hear anything. So when one person is talking that you can actually get your views across.
Right.
So anything that we're actually getting our views across is always one person talking. And exactly. Now,
right.
now the common argument from theists is, you outnumber somebody. Well, we don't look at it like it's 1-on-4. We look at it like it's 4-on-1 plus God. Okay. So
right.
if there really is a God that wants to show himself to us, who's all powerful, it doesn't matter how many people are here. Additionally, all of us here on the squad like to go into debates and areas and discussions where we are outnumbered by multiple people, because when you're right about your views, you don't care how many
right.
people it is, because
right.
good logic stands up no matter how many people you're talking
yeah.
to.
Right.
The truth doesn't take an army to defend.
Exactly.
It takes one man.
You know
what I really think, if I can interject, I really think what Matt's problem was and why he was complaining about there being multiple people is because Matt, and as most apologetics do, is that when they're asking you questions, they're trying, they're not really listening to what you say, but they're listening to key words that you say to make them understand where your line of thinking is going, in other words. So if his complaint was that because he had to talk to four different people, he couldn't keep up with four different people that he thought would be four different people's line of thinking. Even what he didn't get was that you were all pretty much talking, you know, the same argument. And he didn't get that. So I think that was an early appeal of his to emotionalism in order to be able to, say later on that he's some kind of a martyr. You know, he seems
right.
like he's kind of martyr kind of complex. He'll go back to his side and say, hey, I got trounced because they wouldn't let me talk and blah, blah, blah.
Of course.
You know,
yeah.
like that.
All Christians have that. The persecutor conquest.
Anybody who listened to the damn show and thinks that we treated him poorly he got his time to speak and all he did was bitch with it, and you know it dumbfounds me, but I know that's exactly what's going to happen,
you know.
So but the old poor persecuted Christian, you
right.
know what, you know, if we really wanted to persecute him, we wouldn't have bothered to have him on the show.
We would just talk about him behind his back.
We'd ignore him and well, we're doing that now.
Well, no, because he had his fair share, and now we're taking our time back. It's basically what we're doing, you know.
But whatever. We gave him a forum, and he chose not to make use of it.
You know what's interesting is he could easily come into the chat room.
Well,
right
he made
now.
He made use of it. He just made use of it by
poorly, by bitching.
Yeah. Talk about him behind his back like you're doing now. Well, I got a feeling he'll hear this show.
Right.
Hello, Matt. You know?
And he's probably...
We wouldn't
want to
talk while he was on the air, because then we'd probably be interrupting or talking too much or using a straw man or doing something that he's doing. You know?
You know, so. And I would say, gladly say anything I'm saying right now right to his face.
I have
no problem with it. I think the man is an intellectual coward. I really do.
Yeah. And that actually falls in line with
saying.
Every presuppositionalist I have ever run into. I have absolutely no respect for their intellect. None. Zero. Zilch. You got it, presuppers? You are the dumbest and the lamest and the most illogical and nonsensical of all forms of theism. If you are a presuppositionalist, pick up books, start reading, learn logic. You have no fucking clue. Okay? I have no respect. I can offer out respect for Ray Comfort. Okay? A presuppositionalist gets an infinitely minuscule amount of respect as compared to Ray Comfort. Okay? I mean, there is none for people like Matt Slick. And we granted it to him.
You know,
we at least pretended like we...
tomorrow, and down could be up tomorrow, and, you know, red could be blue tomorrow, and green could be yellow.
Mm, right. Yeah, let's go with the problem of induction.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's try to throw that one around. So, I was waiting for a phone call from anybody in the chat room that wanted to jump in. Look like anybody does want to jump in.
I wanted to address something that Ian Knott was putting up in the chat room earlier. He's like, the answer to his question was that, presuppositionalism can be determined based on logic, like what makes the most conclusive logical argument, but that's the means, not
wait, he's a presupper?
Not the means.
He's a presupper, Ian Knott?
I don't know.
Okay, because he asked if he could come on the show. Or something to that sort, and we let him and give him the number 10 minutes ago, and he hasn't called, and we've reminded him 15 times.
Right. Okay, we have someone who's come on the show, I think. Eilj, or however you pronounce it. I can't.
Anybody wants to call in, go ahead and call in right now.
Eilj, or whatever.
Freaking cat.
Once again, this is going to be an unedited show.
Yeah, sorry, the cat's walking across my keyboard right now.
Who's calling? Who's calling? So Eilj is probably Matt Slick. I'm guessing that's Matt Slick.
No, he was in the chat the entire time.
Yeah, he's been in the chat the whole time.
Which one's Matt Slick?
Matt Slick isn't in the chat. Because
Matt Slick is calling me now on a number that he doesn't know unless he was in the chat room.
Julie backwards.
Matt? I don't think Matt can talk and type
Julie
at the same time.
Yeah, but maybe it's in Hebrew.
Matt says he's calling, so who is KP? Friend of Matt? Because Matt's done on today's show. Matt doesn't get any more time on today's show.
Say that we're enough to get more?
So Matt is KP?
No, I don't know who Matt is.
Matt is sort of KP. KP says, Matt says he's calling. Is Matt KP? Sorta.
Sorta.
Yeah.
Sorta.
No.
He said no.
No, now he says no. And KP, could you stop interrupting me, too? Okay. How am I going to ask you this question? All right. Are you Matt Slick? Says interrupting me with saying no.
Maybe they're using the same, psychic that they have when they talk in their mind to Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
They can do that with each other.
So does anybody want to call? All right. Looks like we got no calls coming through.
I thought Julie was going to call, but I guess not.
Says he's in Matt's chat room. He says he's calling.
Oh, yeah, karm.org does have it.
Well, how long does it take Matt to dial up the number?
KP says that he's in Matt's chat room and that Matt says he's calling. Well, Jesus also said he was going to be right back.
That turned out. I'll be back within the generation of those around me. 100 years later.
So if Matt's trying to call, it's not ringing here.
Oh, Matt called.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, yeah. He called.
Oh.
Yeah,
I just didn't answer it.
We don't want
to. No, like anything, whatever.
I presupposed that there wouldn't be anybody in there on the phone.
Presuppose it would be the wrong number or bad connection. Whatever. Like, Matt, you had your chance today.
Yeah, tell Matt that if he wants us on his show, he's got to write Kelly, the girl. He's got to figure out what her email is.
It's Kelly at rationalresponders.com. He already has her email.
Yeah, right.
Matt's looking right to Kelly, and Kelly will come on a show. And as Matt said, she will get treated better there than he was treated here. So, and I believe that, considering he's on local regular radio.
Right, because civility has direct bearing on what's true.
Yeah, true.
Go ahead, God. You were saying?
Kelly, I think you should insist when you go on that show that he refer to you as ma'am.
Oh, I don't want anybody to refer to me as ma'am.
I'm sorry, ma'am.
Julie's like,
I don't know who you are. I'm sorry,
yeah,
ma'am.
No,
Julie. It's Julie backwards.
Julie. Julie is backwards. Saying you wanted him to call, but now you won't let him. No, I
no,
never
we
wanted
don't
him,
want him to call.
Call I never asked Matt Slick to call back. I don't know what planet you're working on there. Maybe it's Presuppositionville, and you just presuppose that.
Yeah, maybe you are awful, and you're just projecting that we're awful.
Yeah. So, no, I never asked Matt Slick to call. Anybody that wants to call and comment on the show can.
Who am I talking to? Is this Borg?
We are the Borg. Presuppositions are useless.
Resistance is futile.
He actually called me Borg too. That was funny.
Yeah, it was really funny.
I don't think he got it.
He probably didn't get the joke at all.
Kelly is very rude.
Julie.
I'm so rude. I dare to call somebody on their bullshit. Ah, it's so rude when you tell people that they're full of it.
What's funny is Julie had a chance to call, but she was too puss to do it.
Kelly's email is kelly@rationalresponders.com.
Yeah, Kelly has a huge rack at rationalresponders.com. That's it.
And
Kelly, huge rack.
I guess we have to end this show. It was a fun little wind down here, untypical of us. But today's discussion was rather untypical as well. So would that be atypical? Atypical, I think.
Atypical?
Would it be atypical or untypical?
Atypical,
Kelly, you're a grammar expert. Are you listening?
Excuse me? That would be atypical.
It would be atypical. Today's show is atypical. Sorry. Here we go. We might as well fill up another minute. Zombie wants to ask Kelly an unrelated question. Yes, Zombie, you may, but if you would like, I can answer before you even ask the question. 36F.
No, actually, I'm a G now. They've grown.
Wow.
36G now.
They've expanded.
No, technically a 34, but whatever.
34
Before
G,
you end there, can I have a minute to plug something?
Plug something. Oh, yeah, was it prayerstojake.com?
prayerstojake.com. What I'm looking for is, you know, there's been the running joke in the chat room and what have you, that praying to Jake has 51% better results than any other god out there. What I'm looking for is people to send in testimonial videos to me to talk about, you know, they're having their prayers answered by Jake. You know, how
I'll do
their
it.
Prayer was answered. Like, for example, a healthy addict's going to make a video about how I made her internet connection run. And, you know, so I'm going to try to get Goat, who's going to make one for a prayer that he says I answered for him. And so I'm trying to get other people to make videos, too, and we're going to put it on a website. It's going to be called prayerstojake.com. And it's just going to be real fun.
Yeah, so, prayerstojake.com. I'll do
Jake
one, Jake, as soon as I have time.
Network.com.
It's jake@atheistnetwork.com. Send in a submission video if you pray to Jake and it works. For those that don't know, and I explained it, I think, in the last show, prayerstojake.com, the new website, is going to be included in our network as soon as we get our heads out of our butts. And you can pray to Jake. And Jake, you know, is very modest. He's a very modest man. He says that, you know, that his prayers to him will work at a 51% greater success rate than prayers to any other god. But that's actually untrue. It's much more like 100%. I've prayed 6 times to Jake. We prayed earlier today, didn't we?
We did pray earlier,
yes.
But your computer would reboot fine, and it did.
It did. That's right. Seven for seven prayers to Jake for me. And I don't understand it. I don't get it. Stacks? Did you hear about Stacks in that poker game, Jake? In that poker game, I told Stacks that he cheated. He told about it. He talked about it on a show. But Stax, you know, came over to our house and we were playing a big poker game. And Stax needed, he had 4 outs on the deck. Okay. I went all in. Stax said, I'm going to gamble. He took a few minutes. He's like, I'm going to call.
Be dangerous.
And he called. Okay. Now he has 4 outs on the deck. So at this point, he's calling like 60% of the money for like a 8% chance. Okay. But he says he prayed to Jake. And I didn't realize that he had cheated. Had I known, I would have prayed, knowing that you and I have a history. I think my prayer would have been the answered prayer. And you answered his prayer, which cost me and everybody at the table quite a bit of money. I don't know why you did that.
Well, it's first come, first serve.
Jake works
in
mysterious
ways. Yeah, I got a lot of requests coming
in. He hit the card. I mean, he needed like, he was 4 threes in the deck that could help him, and he hit a 3. So, you know, I don't understand.
Yeah, I remember that.
Jake,
that
I'm aware of, like 10 for 10. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Jake, I also prayed to you today, too. The squad doesn't know this, but yeah, but I basically prayed that I would pwn Matt in the debate, and it happened that you answered my prayers for me. You're better than his god, man. You fucking rock.
So listen, Kelly was asked.
Go forth and make a video.
Kelly was asked the question, and I wanted to answer it on air, but before we get there, I want to remind everybody too, check out thecomptoneffect.com for Graydon Square's new album. Graydon is a vital part of the Rational Response Squad team out there repping us in the hip hop community, making a lot of YouTube videos. He's a quantum physics major. He, grew up in Compton, fought the war in Iraq, and now, the encouragement of the Rational Response Squad has actually come out with an album. Some of his songs from his album and some new songs are going to be on our album. But he's simply amazing. If you hadn't heard his music yet, head over to his website, thecomptoneffect.com, pick up his album right now. But, Kelly, I mentioned, I think like a week ago, or I know what it was in that Skepticality podcast, I mentioned that you were like kind of like the star in your church. And I don't know, maybe I phrased that wrong, but the zombie's asking you about that now. He was curious about like, were you like respected in the church and like what people thought of you and whatnot? And then how did that change as you changed your position?
Well, yeah, when the church that I was in was a really small church, but whatever, there may be like 100 members, but obviously I knew other Christians too. And of course they were all impressed with my knowledge and whatever, you know, kind of nonsense. They like to study apologetics, the Bible, all that kind of shit, you know. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where you want me to go with that, but I did take theology courses for 2 years at a Jesuit university as well. But
well, oh, I mean, what happened? Sorry. How did the changeover happen? What happened when you left religion and interactions with those people?
When I deconverted and I mean, pretty much immediately let everybody know, they just came up with all kinds of absurd excuses and reasons how that could have happened. Well, I must never have been saved to begin with. Some of them said that it was because I was so smart that I deconverted, which is really like, I mean, why would you admit that? You know, well, obviously it's because you're using your brain. That's why you can't believe this shit anymore. And we don't. So if you want to hold on to your faith, don't use your brain. Moral of the story.
Right. I'm sorry you went to a Jesuit university. That sucks.
Well, you know what? I'm not sorry at all. It's private, the education itself is very good, and I enjoy that kind of stuff. My theology professors loved me, despite the fact that I disagreed with them on every point. I mean, our class turned into like point counterpoint, where the professor would bring up the topic and then say specifically in front of the whole class, "So, Kelly, what do you think of that?" That he used to say to them, like, I'm sitting here in a room full of Catholics. How come the only person who knows the Bible is an atheist? Right. He let me write every single one of my papers as a refutation of whatever everybody else had to write their paper on. I thought it was great.
All right. Oh, okay, cool. Jake, let me let you go. We have a voicemail from Matt Slick. I'll play the voicemail from Matt Slick and let that be the last word. Jake might have picked up a call waiting, so I'm going to go ahead and cancel that out. And let's see here. Let me play the voicemail from Matt Slick. And that'll be the conclusion of today's show. So once again, don't forget to check out our sponsor, EvolveFish.com. EvolveFish.com, of course, is the home of the Evolve Fish, Rational Response to Jesus Fish, and they have all sorts of other materials there for you to pick up. Pick up something from Amazon.com, but buy it through our website, and we'll get credit. Anything you buy from Amazon, your dish towels, your little compass, nightlights you need, you can get your groceries on Amazon. You know, you can get anything in the world on Amazon, and everything you buy from their website, buying it through our store. Anytime you click an Amazon link from our site, doesn't matter which one it is, and then you start browsing Amazon.com, within 24 hours of your original click, we get credit for all those purchases. So definitely check that out. Any other final words from you guys?
No? Stop interrupting me.
All right. Until next time, folks. Stay rational. And here is Matt with the final word.
Brian, I'm so disappointed in you guys. After the show, you do your mutual pat back, exit on the back. You know, I'll tell you guys, I would love to have you on my radio show. And let's see who's more logical, gentlemen. Let's see if you guys can actually back up what it is you're saying. It's too bad you cut me off when we finally started to get into something that was interesting. But if you guys can't handle it, let me know. Okay? I'm willing to have you on my show, and we can have a discussion. We'll have one of you on my show, all right? You pick a representative. Let's get on and let's see how it goes. Are you up to it? I'll try calling you on the air again.
That representative will be Kelly. So look forward to it. Write Kelly at rationalresponders.com.